Hello, and welcome to the Heathrow results call for the year ended 31st December 2023. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question-and-answer session. Please note this call is being recorded. Today I'm pleased to present Sally Dingle, Director of Treasury and Business Planning. Please begin your meeting.
Thank you, Annika. Welcome everyone who's here in person and also those dialing in audio and video conference. Thank you for joining us. My name is Sally Dingle, the Director of Treasury and Business Planning. Today we will present our financial performance results for the year ending 2023. I'm delighted to welcome Thomas Wildberg, our Chief Executive Officer, who is here for his first time for the results presentation since he joined Heathrow in October, and also Javier Echeve, you know very well, our Chief Financial Officer. Thomas will start by presenting an overview of our performance and the business and some of his initial observations as a new CEO. Javier will then provide more details on the financial performance and the latest outlook for the year. Finally, at the end, I will open the floor for Q&A and for any question you may have. So please join me in welcoming Thomas.
Well, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to see you all here, and welcome. Thank you very much for joining us today, not only here in the room but also those of you who join us online. So thank you very much for that. You will have to bear with me. I'm new at this, as Sally just said. So if I don't get it all right, then please excuse me. And with that disclaimer, I think I'll just step right into it. Okay. I know. It doesn't need to be turned on or anything like that. There we go. Talking about disclaimers. Anyway, let's move on to the interesting part. Here we go. When we look at the overall performance of Heathrow in 2023, it was another year of strong passenger growth. We reached 79.2 million passengers. That's the third highest in the history of the company, and I think coming back from COVID, a really impressive performance by the team. It also made us the busiest airport in Europe, which obviously we are proud of, and moved us in the category of the top five airports in the world. We also made significant progress in improving passenger service, providing smooth journeys for all our customers, particularly towards the end of the year. Our financial performance, I think, reflects the traffic recovery. Revenue grew to 3.7 billion pounds with an operating cost of 1.5 billion pounds, leading to an adjusted EBITDA for the year of 2.2 billion pounds. In fact, that is the highest ever in our history. I cannot promise that's going to continue, but we'll come back to why. This has supported our return to a small underlying profit before tax after 4 years of losses. Finally, liquidity and the balance sheet remain very strong, and that gives us a great platform to build on. I think a lot of credit goes to the team because I've only been along for 3 months of the year. A lot of credit to the team for building this platform coming out of hard COVID years in 2021 and 2022 and now giving us opportunity to build an even better Heathrow going forward. This year we expect to welcome in excess of 81 million passengers, which will make it the busiest year that we have ever had. As I said earlier, financial performance is slightly more at risk in the sense that the last settlement with the CAA has meant that our charges will be reduced by 20% in real terms as of 1st of January. Turn to the next slide here. And just a little bit of my observations arriving in the company now. I've only been around for 4 months, but I have spent quite a lot of time on the floor, if you like, trying to get to understand the business that I'm now in. Airports are very physical businesses, as you know. And I think to understand a business like that, you really need to be around on the floor, understanding what is going on in the various parts of the business, not only our parts, but also that of our many partners in Team Heathrow, so airlines, ground handlers, retailers, and others who are all part of making us what we are. I had days in excess of 25,000 steps, which I've never had before in my life. Conclusion is we have an airport that works really well for our customers, and as I said, it gives us a strong platform for the future, and we are ready for the future. We built back really quickly after the pandemic, and now it's sort of time to focus on the build back better part. So how can we take what we have, improve it, and make it more efficient at the same time? Obviously, when you build back after a period like COVID, you focus really on getting things done, rather on whether you get them done in the most efficient manner. That is what we are going to start focusing on now. Our success also lies with a solid relationship with our airlines and operators. As I said, what we call Team Heathrow, and we will work even harder on strengthening those relations, talking more about the value that our customers get by operating at Heathrow. I've also seen an organization, not only in Heathrow Limited, but also across our partners, that is truly committed to achieving our decarbonization goals. We are making the progress we should in that area, and you'll see more as we move forward. I would say I have not so much more to say about the cutting charges other than it does challenge us, and we need to put in place actions to make sure that we counter the effects of the settlement and continue to provide good results both for our customers and for our shareholders. That, of course, will require some choices, that we make the right choices in terms of how and where we invest and how and where we spend our OpEx. As I said, we are determined to do that without affecting our customer service, but that is going to be a relatively tough ride to make sure we can do that. It doesn't come easily in a big, heavy infrastructure like the one we manage. But of course, our goal is to protect the investment of our creditors and our shareholders, generate fair return with a clear focus on restarting dividends distributions as soon as it's safe financially to do so, and ideally that would be this year if possible. So a little bit on the business update. In 2023, as I said, a total of slightly more than 79 million passengers traveled through our terminals, a 29% increase over the previous year, which in any business would be quite an amount of business growth to handle. Our main markets performed well, which is primarily the transatlantic routes driving that. But if we look at the various regions around the world, as you can see on the map there, all areas were really up. Where we are still a little bit behind is particularly China, which we expect to be catching up this year. Our route network remains truly diverse and strong. We ended the year being connected to 207 destinations in 88 territories and countries. That makes us the most interconnected hub in the world. New York still remains the most popular destination, and we had 24 routes, each serving over 1 million passengers in 2023, believe it or not. Inbound tourism increased, while business travel also saw a slight increase from 26% in 2022 to 27% of the business in 2023. This is still slightly below pre-pandemic levels. We have also seen larger aircraft, and with load factors just below 80%, that provides a further opportunity for growth. I think you said, Javier, we have 23 million empty seats leaving Heathrow, and those are the ones we'll focus on filling in the future, providing growth for the airport. Despite the challenges in the global air cargo industry, we experienced a modest increase in our tonnage compared to 2022, so moving in the right direction. We were the year recognized as the best airport in Europe, according to passengers done by Business Traveler magazine, as well as the most connected hub, as I said, which is clearly showcasing our fundamental role in facilitating global travel and connectivity. We also surpassed even Istanbul Airport and stands as the fourth busiest airport in the world. Our European market share increased to 23% overall, and our share of long-haul flights is 33%, sorry, up 2% from 22. All numbers that we are quite proud of, to be honest. On this slide, you can see some of our service and operational metrics, key points in terms of our success with customers. Our commitment to customer service and robust contingency plans ensured the smooth operation during 23. We achieved an ASQ, as it's called, that's Airport Service Quality Rating of 3.99, as you can see up there, a slight improvement to 22. We are clearly have an ambition to make that even better. I'll come back to that. But it means that 3/4 of passengers rated us either excellent or very good, which is not bad at all coming out of COVID. Our operational resilience was strong with a significant improvement in security performance. 93% of passengers passed through security within 5 minutes. In 22, that was 69%, so a really strong improvement. And despite increased demand and external factors such as weather, we had strikes, airspace congestion, overall punctuality improved during the year. The punctuality gap, as we call it, between departures and arrivals narrowed from 11% to 3%, meaning that our draw on the system was reduced. And in fact, if we look at our arrival and departure punctuality in January, it was back to the level of 19, and in fact, we had a better departure punctuality than arrival punctuality, meaning that we are now contributing to the robustness of the system, which is really, really positive and where we want to be. Finally, baggage connection performance remains stable at 98%. We need to get it up a little bit, but nonetheless, not too bad. And as I said, really what's important to me are the trends. Where are we now? Not where were we on an average in January. And the ASQ for a score in fourth quarter was 4.01%. So again, improved already from the average, and we're going to continue on that journey. And we had, in fact, more than 97% of all passengers passing through security in less than 5 minutes, so another improvement. So the trend, and that's the important part for me, is really going the right direction. A little bit about our investment plans. We have good progress with those, we are looking at, obviously, improving customer experience and operational resilience. We have 6 core programs designed to enhance safety, resilience, compliance, commercial revenues, and customer experience. They include the next generation security, so new security lanes where you don't have to pull out your liquids and your electronics, but can leave it there all in the bag and just put it through the scanner. I think you're probably all customers at Heathrow, I would hope, and you're going to enjoy that experience when it gets to you. It's our T2 baggage system, which is now underway, our commercial proposition and sustainability. We're upgrading, in fact, 146 security lanes, and I've been told that's more than all other airports in the UK combined, so it's a big project, and the investment is about £1 billion. The Terminal 2 baggage system, we have now chosen who is going to deliver it for us, and the whole program has started. So we'll see a modern and updated baggage system in T2 today, believe it or not, that the system operating for T2 is in fact the old T1 baggage system, which will be closed down as soon as we can get away with it. We continue to invest in the cargo and main tunnel projects, runway surfacing, and a new virtual control tower facility, which will be a resilience if something should happen to the one that we operate from every day. We invested nearly £100 million last year to enhance our retail and digital offerings. And with our commitment to sustainability, we are installing EV charging points and preconditioned air systems at aircraft stands. Now, the last slide, I think, turning to an overview of what we call Heathrow 2.0, so our carbon goals and the like. We became the first airport to receive science-based target initiatives validation of our 2030 carbon reduction goals. Very important to say that we are on the right journey. We don't just have a target out there, we're actually on a journey to get there. Additionally, we launched the world's first sustainability-linked bond covering scope 1 to 3 emissions, reaffirming our commitment to sustainable finance. We have made significant steps in promoting sustainable aviation fuels. Record amounts of SAF were used at Heathrow during 2023. We expect to exceed that in 2024. And also, as you might notice, the first flight across the Atlantic, powered entirely by sustainable aviation fuels, performed by Virgin, took place from Heathrow in October, I think. We are also dedicated to what we call being a great place to live and work, and we have launched a giving back program, which is aimed at benefiting 1 million people around us by 2030 through community investments. Across the year, over 1,000 of our colleagues volunteered more than 3,800 hours of support to our community initiatives. I think really admirable and something at least I'll be proud of. Finally, we continue to prioritize equity, diversity, and inclusion with a 6% year-on-year increase in colleagues feeling included, reflecting our ongoing efforts to create a diverse, inclusive workplace where all colleagues feel valued and respected. I think with that, I will hand over to Javier for what you maybe really came for, which are the hard numbers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Thomas, and hello, everyone. So let me share with you a bit of the overview on our key financial performance, starting on slide 14. So as Thomas mentioned, obviously, we are back in profits. I was almost getting used not to be there after four long years. But obviously, that's driven very much by the strong traffic recovery that we saw in 2023, 79.2 million passengers. That obviously helped us to grow our revenue to 3.7 billion, the highest it has ever been. Obviously, operating costs also increased to make that happening to 1.5 billion, and that mean that our adjusted EBITDA increased to 2.2 billion. As Thomas mentioned, again, our record in our history. Especially the last quarter of last year, and you could argue that is the Thomas effect, help us to really return to profit. So finally, we are, after 4 years, we are back to profit, small profit, 38 million pounds, especially after we removed the non-cash fair value changes to our financial instruments as well as investment properties. But it's great to be back in profit. Obviously, that's going to be a challenge, because we are seeing, at the same time, airport charges falling by 20% in real terms from first of January, in line with the CAA settlements. And that means that we are even more encouraged to remain profitable as we push ourselves to become even more efficient and making better choices in terms of investments and trade-offs. Nonetheless, our balance sheet remains very strong, with increasing cash flow from operations to over 2 billion. And that has allowed us to increase capital expenditure, which is something that we have been discussing with you in the past. We were not investing as much as we would like. And that explain why in 2023, we increased our CapEx by 37% to in excess of 600 million pounds. Looking at net debt, we saw a very small increase at Heathrow SP level, and a slightly higher increase in Heathrow Finance. The main reason for that is because at the end of the year, as soon as we had the opportunity, we made a decision to upstream some of the cash sitting in Heathrow Finance to repay the 750 million pounds loan facility that we had sitting above Heathrow Finance at ADIF 2, and we did that in December. From an assets perspective, our regulatory asset base continues if we take a closer look at the details, starting on revenue from slide 15, as mentioned, aeronautical revenue increased by 32%, primarily attributed to the higher passenger numbers that you have seen, as well as slightly higher aeronautical charges in 2023. In terms of its components, airport retail revenue rose by 24% due to more passengers, but also increased car parking revenue, terminal drop-off fees, premium passenger service, and also diversified mix of retail offerings. On a per passenger basis, our income decreased by 3.8% to slightly shy of 9 pounds, primarily due to the normalization of passenger travel modes post-pandemic, but also the damaging impact of the removal of tax-free. Other revenue, on the other hand, saw an increase of almost 10%, driven by passenger numbers contributing to growth in our Heathrow Express revenue, and also an increase in property revenue following the renewals of leases and on improved terms, but also new lets. In nominal terms, our revenue, as you can see, is up 20% in comparison to 2019. However, when we remove the impact of inflation, that shows that our revenue in real terms decreased by 7% versus 2019, primarily driven by regulated charges. Moving to costs, you can see on the slide that the operating costs increased by 19% to 1.5 billion pounds due to increased capacity, but also reflecting inflation and full resourcing across the airport. Employment costs have increased in line with inflation and the effort that we have been doing to rebuild capacity to capture the higher passenger numbers. This includes costs associated with additional colleagues across the airport, but also overtime recruitment, training, and third-party resourcing. Obviously, this strategy has proven to be very successful, as you can see on the previous slide, but obviously, that means that we have had to invest more on the employment cost side. Moving to another cost line, we saw an increase in maintenance costs, and this is largely attributed to terminal cleaning and conservation efforts across all terminals, but as well as airside baggage areas, to make sure that we maintain our commitment to safety, but also to maintain well-maintained areas for passengers and colleagues. Additionally, utilities and other costs have been impacted by higher consumption and, more importantly, by increased energy prices. Importantly, despite all these pressures, we are proud to say that in real terms, our costs remain below 2019 levels. Moving on to slide 17. Obviously, this is a slide that seems that became a bit popular during the pandemic, but let me disappoint you to say that probably this is going to be the last time that we are going to share this slide. Don't take this as a disappointment, but actually as a signal of success. Now that we are back to a stable business, hopefully, I think that you will see that this is going to become pretty much a very predictable, stable line. Therefore, this will be the last time that we'll be sharing this slide. We can provide signed copies at the end if you feel very close to them, but let me say that it will be, unfortunately, the last time we produce this. In terms of content, what this slide should tell you is that the cash burn is stabilizing as we are seeing full operations and investment returning to more normalized levels, importantly also linking with CapEx. In terms of interest paid, again, it's stabilizing. What we have seen in 2023 is that we have stopped collecting the benefits from the swap reprofiling program that we put in place during the pandemic. More importantly, I think on this chart is the line, the hard line that you can see, which is liquidity. Liquidity remains very strong, but it's true that has dipped in the final quarter, precisely driven by the upstream of cash from Heathrow Finance to ADIF 2 to pay the 750 million pounds of facility that obviously was the most expensive facility that we had, and therefore we have prioritized its payment. I think it's important to mention that in line with the business recovering and more stable outcome, you should expect that gradually we will go back to the liquidity policy of no less than 18 months that we had pre-pandemic. In terms of slide 18 and talking about a bit more about net debt, the Heathrow SPE's net debt closed at 14.8 billion pounds, and that's a small increase of less than 2% versus the start of the year, 2023. Obviously, first component is cash flow from operations, which is bang on aligned with EBITDA performance. Our working capital remains very small and stable. Obviously, this extra cash was more than enough to cover our capital investment, including the 127 million pounds advance payment that we put in place in December to purchase the Compass Centre, which is our headquarters at Heathrow. That explains why our RAB to net debt was slightly different from what we published previously in our investor report. We were expecting to close the transaction of the Compass Centre in December, but finally, we closed the transaction in January, which means that we made the payment, but we didn't book the investment on the RAB. That explains the small difference. Apart from that, you can see that most of the components are predictable, and probably the only one to mention is inflation accretion on our debt. Obviously, while inflation helped to increase the RAB, obviously, we continue to see a higher annual accretion charge on our inflation-linked swaps and bonds, which ultimately led to the small overall increase in net debt that you can see in the chart. We will continue managing proactively the accretion liabilities, and during the year 2023, we made cash paydowns of accretion balance of around 580 million pounds. Moving to slide 19, to provide an update on gearing. Our current gearing is notably below 2019 levels, and that demonstrates not only our efforts to manage net debt, but also leveraging the impact of positive inflation that we have seen through our regulatory asset base. As you can see from the slide, we continue operating with strong covenant headrooms across all the layers of our debt, and that gives us robustness, but also flexibility. In terms of the changes over the last quarter, you can see that group gearing stands an increase to 84.9% at total Heathrow S.p. level, and that increase is primarily driven by the payment of the ADIF 2 facility that I have mentioned several times that we upstream cash at the very end of the year. I think finally, I think unrelated with this slide, and when you look at our cash flow metrics, it's really important to remind briefly what's the impact of inflation on our metrics. Our friend inflation, which actually I really mean it because it's a friendly actually issue for infrastructure. So as you know, on the one hand, higher inflation is increasing the value of our regulatory asset base because it's directly linked to RPI. But on the other hand, we have chosen to link around 50% of our debt to inflation, and that's pretty much driven by a prudent management. Explains why our RAB grew faster than our debt, which explains the reduction in gearing that we have seen versus 2019. At the same time, when it comes to cash flow cover metrics, it's worth noting the timing mismatch between the monetization of the impact of inflation in assets and in liabilities. While our RAB is monetized through aeronautical revenue over a period of around 20 years, the inflation accretion on our debt is settled in no more than 5 years. So in other words, the inflation accretion outflows are settled 4 times faster than the inflows. And that explains why our headroom on cash flow metrics has reduced slightly while maintaining healthy buffers as affirmed by credit rating agencies. So what you should expect as inflation normalizes and reduces is a reversal of this trend. Therefore, you should expect going forward that cash flow metrics buffer will increase, hopefully will increase, and then we would look to return gradually to prior levels of gearing. Finally, returning to slide 20 for an updated outlook for the year. In line with investor report, we are forecasting maintaining the outlook. We are forecasting 81.4 million passengers and 1.9 billion pounds of EBITDA. Our funding plan for the year is around 1 billion pounds, and we will be looking at different options, prioritizing relative value. And as Thomas mentioned at the start, although dividends are not forecasted for 2024, we will continue working to make that an option as soon as it's safe to do so, and ideally as soon as 2024. So with that, I conclude the financial review and I'll hand it back to Thomas for closing comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Javier. I'll make it really short. I'll talk a little bit about the future. Talk a little bit about the future and how we look at that. When I look at the company, we have been through a really rough period in the last 4 years. We now have established a platform to build on, a very strong platform, both in terms of operations, in terms of resilience, safety, security, customer feedback, and also financials. So we have a platform now from which to build a stronger and even better Heathrow. We have decided, and that's the preview I'll give you on our strategy, which is coming in a few months' time, our strategy, we have decided to keep our purpose the same, which is to make every journey better. Only we will sort of expand on that. It has previously mostly focused on the passenger. We'll make sure now that we unfold that purpose and make sure that the journeys we talk about are, of course, the passenger journey, but it's also the journey for our airlines. It's the journey for our colleagues. It's our climate journey, our decarbonization journey, and it's also the journey in the way we affect the society around us. So we'll expand on that, but our focus will be to, in our strategy, making sure that we make all of those journeys better and more attractive than they were in the past. As I said, that strategy will be launched in a couple of months' time, and you will hear more about it at the next meeting. We remain committed to expansion. That will also be a part of the strategy. So we need to create capacity at Heathrow. what we will focus more on, I think maybe than in the immediate past, is what happens on from now and until we may have a third runway in place. No matter what decisions we may take and how fast we take them, there will be quite some years before we get to a third runway. And what do we do in the meantime? How do we create capacity within the boundaries of the airport that we already have? And we'll be focusing more on that in order to drive growth also in the short term and clearly also in the long term. So from where I'm standing, we have a lot to look forward to create an even more attractive and sustainable hub for the for UK. And that's at least what I what I'm looking forward to take part in and to lead. So with that, I'll just stop for now, and I think we'll open up for Q&A if I'm not wrong. So thank you very much. I'll just come back and say thank you in the end.
Thank you, Thomas. Thanks, Javier. I will now open the floor for Q&A. Annika?
Thank you. If you do wish to ask an audio question, please press star 11 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing star 11 again to cancel. Once again, it's star 11 to register for a question.
Thank you, Annika. We will start from online. Annika, any questions online or on the phone?
Yes, we do have a question from Noah Sehur from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Quick question. You spoke about upstreaming 700 million of cash above Heathrow Finance. Could I ask, like, if there's any other debt that's above Heathrow Finance and if you may upstream more cash to repay that debt? And then my second question is, what's the plan with regards to the 24 and the 25 maturities coming at Heathrow Finance? Are you planning to refi them soon?
Thank you. I think I probably can quickly answer this question. Yes, we upstreamed 750 million cash from Heathrow Finance to repay the debt sitting at ADIF 2, as Javier said, in December. We do not have any other external debt above Heathrow Finance. And in terms, in relation to the funding for the 24-25, as you know all very well, we are doing portfolio funding to maintain, as Javier said, around 18 months liquidity horizon. Therefore, we do not refinancing any particular debt for another one. So portfolio funding to maintain the minimum liquidity horizon. We do have around 1 billion funding this year, so that's where we are at, looking through. Any other question, Annika, online?
Sorry, I'm not clear on the last question. So is the plan to refinance about around 1 billion of Heathrow Finance?
No, so the 1 billion were across the whole group to refinancing or using as a general corporate purposes in order to maintain at least 18 months liquidity horizon. And we do not refinancing any specific debt by another debt. And that 1 billion funding, maybe it's the best time to explain here, we're across the capital structure we have across Class A, Class B and Holdco, with main focus in the Holdco and Class B this year. Does that answer your question?
Right, okay. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
There are currently no further questions from the phone line.
Sure. We'll come to the room, and if anyone have questions, please raise your hand. And Leandro has a microphone here. If you can say your name and organisation and your question, please. While we're waiting for people to think, maybe we can answer some of the questions on the WebEx. There are quite a few questions here in relation to different topics, so I probably just grouped them a bit. The first question would be in relation to some update on the expansion of third runway. Thomas?
Yes, and as I said earlier, we are committed to continue to look at what we can do to expand capacity. It's clear, I think it's also been obvious in the press, that what we're doing right now is that we are reviewing the third runway option. The project is, much of the project facts and data are from before COVID. We need to update that project, the data, and look at what decisions we're going to take in that regard. The decisions we will take, we'll take when we have the right facts, and we're not going to rush that decision because we need to make sure with a project that size, both for the company but also for the for the country and for the people around us that we take the right decision when we take it. So this is a big decision, and it's going to take the time it's going to take for us to take the right decision. Hence also what I mentioned earlier about looking at what can we do to increase capacity in the meantime within the existing infrastructure to create growth in the company.
Thanks, Thomas. And then the next related question on the web. Sorry.
Hi, this is Julia from MetLife. A question around business traffic and what your view is there, whether you see any sort of permanent loss in business traffic compared to where you would have been without COVID. So just, I guess, general views on how business traffic is performing.
Business traffic makes up about one third of our business. What we have seen since the pandemic is really that leisure travel has replaced business travel. So I think we are where we sort of would expect to be, with a slightly different split of business. Business, I mean, overall travel has come back faster than I think anyone thought when we were in the middle of 22. So that is a positive, and I think that buoyancy in the market will continue. That we don't see any indications to the opposite. I think over time we'll see business travel coming back to the same level it was in the past. Whether it's the same kind of business travel and whether that is lower than it would have been had we not had a pandemic, we'll never find out, to be honest. And I think as a company we have stopped thinking about the pandemic and pre and post. What we are really thinking about now is where we're in 22, where we're in 23, where do we want to be in 25 and 27, right? So that's how we're looking at it. But clearly business travel has been slower to come back, and I'm also sure, but this is for my own account, that some business travel have been lost. I mean, a lot of bankers in the room, bankers visiting their own subsidiaries in other countries for one day. I think sort of that has been lost, maybe for good reason, and will never come back, but we can't see that in the numbers. Whereas I think business travel in other areas will be increasing and has been increasing. So, yeah, I think in fact, when we look back 2 years from now, the pandemic will have had very little impact.
I think if I can just add one thing, I think it's worth reminding that because of the nature of our regulation, we take no traffic mix risk. So as an airport, we charge the same, irrespectively of being first business or economy. So we take no traffic mix risk.
Any other question in the room? Okay, let's go back to the WebEx. The next question is in relation to if we have any dividend policy in H7 and how the gearing and net debt would evolve in H7.
So I think to answer the question, first of all, let me start as a matter of principle. I think we have discussed several times that we are 100% private business, and therefore we should be proud of paying dividends as soon as it's safe to do so. We haven't been in losses for too many years, and actually our shareholders have been extremely generous and supportive for these very long 4 years. Therefore, as a matter of principle, I think we should, and we are keen to pay dividends as soon as it's safe to do so. Obviously, that comes with a very clear reassurance that we remain absolutely committed to creditors and our investment grade credit rating. And therefore, with that in mind, I think in terms of what we are looking is to see how we can, as you have seen from the numbers, we are very much pretty much back to 2019 levels and stability. And therefore, going forward, what we should expect is continue balancing these metrics between cash flow and gearing. So as I explained earlier, at this stage, we have a slightly less buffer on the cash flow metrics, and therefore we are taking slightly longer to really rebuild that cash flow buffer. But as you can see on the other side, we have a notably lower gearing than we used to have in 2019, which means that hopefully I think that at a certain point this year, we might be in position to pay dividends again, and it will very much depend on the performance across the year. So, as always at Heathrow, summer will be very important, and that will be the time when we will see if traffic is there. But for us, a signal of success is if we can pay dividends as soon as it's safe to do so.
Thanks, Javier. The next question, probably the other way around, would be, does Heathrow forecast the need for shareholder equity support in order to execute their CapEx programme?
I can take that easily. No.
Thank you. Thank you for explaining expansion update and shareholder the dividends. And there's a question asking, Thomas, what are the shareholders' priorities, expansion versus dividends?
Well, I think, don't think that's an either or. That's really a matter of timing in both. We will be looking at expansion and we'll look at dividends at the same time, obviously. If there comes a point where that there will be an inflection point between the two, we'll take those decisions. But as far as I'm concerned, that's pretty far out in the future. So that's way too early to talk about that. But we will include capacity growth in our strategy, and you'll hear more about that later. And dividends, I think, Javi just explained, we see it as a healthy thing for a private business to be able to pay dividends, reasonable returns to our shareholders. We need that to attract the right level of investments. So we'll continue to focus on that as long as we have the financial headroom to do that.
Thank you, Thomas. Next question for you as well, Thomas, whether there's any update on the Ferrovial sale transaction?
I don't hope I disappoint anyone by saying no. In the sense that as management, we are not privy to that, to the dealings and proceedings that goes on that transaction. And really our focus is to make sure we have a well-functioning airport, no matter what shareholders we have. We don't choose our shareholders, so we just focus on satisfying the ones we have at any given time. So there's really nothing we can comment on that. It's up to the shareholders to do that.
Next question. In relation to the restricted payments, you said 200 million in the report, but then you're also talking about 750 million from Heathrow Finance. I probably can answer that question. Now, the 200 million included in the investor report are the restricted payment from Heathrow SP Group Limited to the Heathrow Finance. That's generally to upstream the cash to pay the interest and maturity at the Heathrow Finance level. The 750 million debt repayment that we use the cash sitting at Heathrow Finance to upstream that cash to repay the additive. Therefore, it was not part of the restricted payments.
So obviously, that was previously, in previous years, was a restricted payment. So, Sophie, I think for your question, if you track back to 2021, which is when I believe we distributed that to Heathrow Finance, at that time was a restricted payment from SP to Finance, but the cash was now sitting in Finance.
Very true. Next question for you, Javier. We obviously heard a lot of news on the VAT-free to bring it back. What could be that benefits to Heathrow on the commercial revenue if that's coming back?
Yeah, right. That for us, it's really more about the benefit for the travelling public, if you like, in the sense that since we are regulated, it doesn't have a huge effect on the bottom line, at least not in the long term of Heathrow. But we believe that this is a really positive equation for the UK to have a VAT fee possibility for the travellers. It does attract travellers to the UK, and it does attract spending, hence creates jobs in the UK, whereas currently that money is spent overseas, spent abroad in other countries, and that simply doesn't make sense, and it makes us less competitive as a travelling country, and that's really what we see as the main thing, because, as we say, at the end of the day, we are regulated, it has less influence, but it will potentially have influence on what kind of brands we can attract in our retail offering, because if we don't have that opportunity, maybe brands, and we have seen brands already reducing or pulling back their presence because of this, so overall we think this should be rectified and we should have a competitive offering also in the UK.
Thank you, Thomas. I think we have answered all the questions on online. If you do have any further questions, let us know. Annika, can I check whether there's any questions on the telephone line?
We do indeed have a few more questions from the phone line.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Dario Maglioni from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. Two questions for me. One is on the retail business. As you mentioned, it's not performing too well. Can you maybe tell us about, you know, what is happening and the outlook? And then in terms of dividend policy, could you maybe elaborate on how you will set the dividend? Will it be like a percentage of net income, adjusted net income, or something else? Thanks.
Yeah, so I can start with dividend policy. Daria, I think at this stage we don't have any specific dividend policy to say. And unfortunately, because we have been too many years not paying dividends, we run the risk almost forgetting what the policy looked like. But what I can tell you is that what we have is to balance these two dynamics. On the one hand, is maintaining our commitment to investment grade credit rating, which at this stage, and I have mentioned already a few times today, we have a robust buffer, and this is not said by me, this is said by credit rating agencies, but we want to really protect that. And on the other hand, the other limitation would be gearing, where you can see that we have notably headroom in comparison with 2019. So as inflation stabilizes, we would like to revert the trend that we have seen over the last 2 years, and therefore, when we see cash flow metrics having the buffer that we feel comfortable, we would be looking at gearing back to the levels that we had pre-pandemic. I'm afraid at this stage I cannot be more explicit than that. On the second question?
Yeah, on the retail offering, I think, now I don't know if we say what we mean by we're saying it's not performing too well. I think if we compare Heathrow to other airports, it's the highest spend of any airport in Europe. But that said, it's right that it's been leveling out a bit, and that has is a direct effect of the VAT rules. So that's what we are sort of battling with right now. And of course, we are looking at how can we improve that further. A new VAT rule would really help us.
Thank you, Dara. Next one.
Sure.
The next question comes from the line of Paul Dew from SMR. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and thank you very much for the presentation. Two questions, if I may. You talked about obviously looking at potentially kind of capacity things you could do in the kind of midterm, obviously given the third wave expansion might be a longer term project. Could you give some colour on kind of the things you could look at? I think in the past it's been the air traffic movements which have been the constraint. So just interested how you can kind of address the constraints you could see in the short to medium term. And then the second one was, if a change of control was triggered, would it apply to all Heathrow Finance debt? And I'm just wondering if you thought about options that you could look at if that was to come about. Thank you.
We can start with the capacity expansion. I think our number of movements will not change, which is one of the challenging, constraining factors that we have. What is happening is that aircrafts are getting bigger. As I said earlier, we have 23 million unfilled seats leaving Heathrow every year. So there's an opportunity to improve, and the way we do that is to work with airlines to make sure our processes are as efficient as possible, that we look at the various bottlenecks that we have in the airport. I mean, if you think about your journey, you know, you potentially park, you go through backdrops, you have a baggage system, you go through security, you have terminals, you have gates, you have stands, and then you have runways. And in order to maximize productivity, you need to go through all of those potential bottlenecks and see how can you straighten them out. And provide more capacity so the airlines can focus on filling the remaining seats. And that is the primary, I think, focus that we would have until another opportunity arises.
Right, I can take the one in change of control. So obviously I and we have stated in the press release, we acknowledge the existence of a change of control clause in Heathrow Finance bonds. And just for those of you who are less familiar with the clause, that's a clause that suggests that if any new or group of new investors were acquiring more than 50% of the stakes, that will trigger a change of control clause in Heathrow Finance. Obviously, as Thomas mentioned before, we are not part of the transaction, therefore it's more for shareholders to comment. But what we can definitely read from the press release provided by Ferrovial is that arithmetically, based on the transaction as it is today, there's going to be no single investor in excess of 50%. And on top of that, I think it's clear from the press release from Ferrovial that the two investors that currently they have signed an SPA with Ferrovial are acting separately and independently, which gives us no concerns around the change of control being triggered. Having said that, obviously, it's pretty much a shareholder matter. But obviously, if we were informed of any change of circumstances that could become material, especially for Heathrow Finance creditors, obviously, we will update you, as we have always done, as soon as possible.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question.
The next question comes from the line of Omar from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Just on going back on the change of control conversation that my colleague just asked about. So obviously you're not party to what's happening with the shareholders, but your interpretation of the change of control covenant is really what I'm intrigued in. So you mentioned that it would be, well, my understanding of the change of control covenant in the doc is that it would be any person or persons, so not necessarily one investor that has more than 50% of shareholding, but a group of investors. So if the shares, if more than 50% of shares change hands to non-permitted holders or new shareholders, that would then trigger a change of control clause. And then just following up on something that was said as well, is just I think you mentioned they're acting separately, which I understand one of the requirements is acting in concert. But, you know, given that you cannot, Ferrovia cannot sell 25% of the shareholding unless the 35% other percent are also sold, isn't that, does that not satisfy the requirement for acting in concert, at least based on the interpretation?
Well, I will just repeat to what I have just said. I think that, first of all, we are not privy to this transaction, and therefore is for shareholders, particularly for Ferrovial, to be the one commenting on this. But just referring to their press release, as you rightly say, this is about acting in concert, and what we have been clearly public is that those two investors are acting separately and independently. Hence, based on the information that we have received from shareholders and what we know from the press release made public, we have no concerns at this stage that that clause would be triggered.
Okay, I see. Okay, that's. Can I just follow up? Just another follow up. I do apologize. Is the change of control also similar in outstanding loans as well? I hear through finance. So I understand they're in the bonds, but I don't have access to the private documents. Can you maybe confirm whether or not there's also a change of control in the outstanding loans at Heathrow Finance?
Well, as you rightly mentioned, I think it's private facilities, and therefore I also have restrictions about how much I can disclose on those private facilities. So obviously, creditors in those facilities have perfect access to both the content of their facilities as well as the change of control in our public bonds. So unfortunately, I cannot disclose content of private facilities. Hopefully, you can understand.
Okay. No, definitely understand. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
The next question comes from the line of Charlie Hind from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks a lot for your time. Just wondered if you had any guidance from the regulator on the next regulatory period, like back CapEx and RAB.
I think the short answer again is no. We are just trying to close off the current the consequences of the current regulatory period. So that's H7. And of course, we will have to some extent started discussions with the CA on how we handle the next regulatory period. But beyond that, no, not really, unless there are specifics you think about.
Thank you, Charlie. Any more questions online?
No further questions from the phone line.
All right. We'll just come back to the room to see if there's any further questions in the room. No. We've had a final question on the web from Paul. Same question about 1 billion funding, whether it's across all the classes and what's the breakdown. So, yes, Paul, the 1 billion funding will across Class A, Class B and Holdco, as I said before, with the main focus on the Class B and Holdco. As usual, we will be looking at private, public market, different currencies, and to see what presents the best relative value to us. Good. No more questions. So, Thomas, would you like to give the final word?
Thank you, Sally, and thank you to the team who made all this possible. Thank you very much. A lot of work has gone into this. For me, it really remains only to thank you all for today. Thank you very much for supporting our business and being part of the success, also being part of the harder times in the slightly more distant past. And we look forward to, together with you, also building a really strong and successful Heathrow in the future. I also have to remember to thank SMBC for hosting us again. And with that, I think I'll just close the session. Thank you all very much, and I hope to see you again next year. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This now concludes our presentation. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect.